The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're glad to have you on our own live stream at thetrumpet.com/live. Most of the people that were watching the live stream on YouTube have transferred over to the trumpet.com website. Because of the YouTube suspension, I've got a brief update on YouTube here in just a second. But first, I thought I would just mention that we had quite a few visitors in town for over the weekend, a big wedding bash yesterday afternoon. But in just talking to several of our Trumpet Daily radio show listeners or our Trumpet Daily viewers that come in from out of town, it was almost like hearing a broken record. Every one of them talked about how utterly useless the major media outlets are these days, particularly after the voter fraud and everything that happened with the fake inauguration and now the fake presidency. And they said there's just really nowhere to turn except for the Trumpet Daily and the Key of David and the Trumpet website and the literature produced by God's church. One example here, this comes from a viewer in Hawaii. It says, as I watch your show this morning, I'm brought to tears, per usual, as I have been brought to tears often in the last month since Election Day. I just wanted to send you an email to say thank you so much for all your work. Having the stomach to watch the inauguration yesterday just wasn't in my appetite. But I could not wait to watch the Trumpet Daily yesterday, this morning, and every morning. It says, the Trumpet Daily is the only show in the world that gives what is happening in Israel in digestible portions. It says, thank you for making or having a relaxed faith, an ever-growing faith, and a faith, the faith of Jesus Christ, that just seems a lot less lonely, it says. Thank you also to the team of The Trumpet and the PCG Media for continuing to soldier on. So that's a sentiment, as I say, that we hear quite often now, people turning to God's work really as the only source of what's true and what's right and, of course, what's prophesied. What's prophesied in your Bible? As we know, Jesus himself, he came into Galilee with the gospel, which means good news of the coming kingdom of God. The gospel of the soon coming kingdom of God. That was a news announcement. And that kingdom is very near. We're living in the last days. And even the way that God's truth is being treated by, as I said earlier, YouTube. We're definitely on YouTube's radar, by the way. They've removed another video. The one that I think caused the suspension was The Darkness Before Dawn. That's from January the 13th. And then Sam noticed that they took down the prophet Amos and his burdensome warning. So that's from January the 15th. So far as we know, there's still just the one strike against our channel. And also, it looks like Richard was checking into it this morning. It looks like the channel is no longer frozen, or however you want to describe the strike or the suspension. But as I was saying last week, I think that we're going to just go without any new videos on YouTube for another week or two, particularly as we continue to address what's on so many people's minds, the election fraud. And how that this is going to sort out going forward in the days and weeks ahead. If you look at the New York Times today, just to give you, again, some insights into their strategy, the way that they discredited the entire case that the Trump administration made over voter fraud. It was a setup, the January 6th insurrection, as it's called. And that's the main story on the New York Times today. This is what, January 25th. And today, the headline, this is the lead story, at least with the email alerts I get each day from the Times. Capitol riot puts spotlight on apocalyptically minded global far right. I mean, this is a worldwide problem. The dangers of the far right, they're everywhere. And they're trying to bring on, I guess, an apocalypse. They don't even know what that word means, really. But it says here, leaderless but united by racist ideology that has been supercharged by social media, extremists have built a web of real and online connections that worry officials. So they're setting the stage for a further crackdown. More censorship. That's what they want. We've got to really crack down on these voices to make sure these apocalyptic voices don't have a platform. We've got to cancel them. We've got to remove their channels. We've got to stop these lies from going out. And again, you can see why so many of our viewers say, well, the media, it's so corrupt. You can't even trust them. There's stories now about the Washington Post and the New York Times, these major publications, that are actually going back over their old articles and revising them. And they're not even, you know, used to be that the New York Times, if they made any change, even with punctuation, they would come along and say, here's a correction that we made on this article from, you know, yesterday or last week or last year. They're not doing that as much anymore. They're going back over articles 2-3 years ago, and it's straight out of George Orwell's book. They're scrubbing the record, or they're revising it. They're changing it. The New York Times did this with the 1619 Project. After it was fact-checked, they just went in and changed it. They removed what was embarrassing, what was ridiculous. They altered it somewhat. The New York Times has been caught doing this. The Washington Post has been caught doing this. They've revised some things recently about Kamala Harris, some things they wrote about her that could have been politically damaging. They've gone back and rewritten the record. This is from a report on the New York Times from Allgemeiner. It says, the New York Times published more than a dozen opinion articles and letters to the editor by Kava Afrasibi. It says, a 2018 Times op-ed under his byline identified him as a former advisor to Iran's nuclear negotiation team. It says, a 2012 Times op-ed identified him as a former political science professor at Tehran University and former advisor to Iran's nuclear negotiation team. And it says here, this week, Afrasabi was arrested and charged with acting as an unregistered foreign agent of the Iranian government. He's a spy, in other words. A spy who just happens to be writing for the New York Times. But that's not a big deal. I mean, we can go back and scrub that now, can't we? We can go back and change the record. Isn't that okay to do? Listen to this little gem from the New York Times. President Biden is perhaps the most religiously observant commander-in-chief in a half century. A different, more liberal Christianity grounds his life and his policy. Now religion's great. Oh, religion is wonderful because Joe Biden is the most religiously observant commander-in-chief we've had in a half century. You remember how they focus in on religion when it's, for example, Amy Coney Barrett? Or any conservative. It's frightening. It's scary. We've got to be concerned about this. But now Joe Biden, the Catholic, shows up, and suddenly the New York Times loves the Christian religion. Suddenly they're not afraid of Christians anymore. Suddenly Christians are no longer dangerous. At least not Joe Biden's form of Christianity. That's to be celebrated. Biden is in there. He's been in the White House for a few days. He, as Melanie Phillips says, he says one thing, and then you look at what he's doing, and it is, well, if you didn't know God's truth, it'd be scary. the executive actions that he's taking. And here he is saying, hey, we're just getting, and the way the media view this, well, we're getting back to normal. We're just taking it right back to what it should have been 4 years ago. God, as you know, interrupted their plans back in 2016, and he'll do it again. But here's Melanie Phillips talking about just how extreme this administration has been in just a few days. She says, has there ever been such a profound and jarring disconnect between a new American president's words and actions on his very first day in office? See, over and again, and we make this point because it comes right out of the New Testament. It comes right from Jesus Christ himself. You have to judge by the fruits. And radical leftists, they are good at sounding peaceful, at sounding like they want unity, like they want to bring everyone together. He spoke in his inauguration speech, the fake inauguration, he spoke about unity. And then Melanie Phillips says, yet within hours of that speech, Biden signed a slew of executive orders to set America on a path of anger, resentment, hatred, division, lawlessness, and joblessness, and which undermine history, faith, and reason. And then she goes on to say, and by the way, executive orders, 17 executive actions. Didn't they used to say that, well, that's a tyrant. That's a dictator. That's an authoritarian. For Donald Trump to sign executive actions to try to undo some of Obama's policies. Now, when it works in their favor, well, this is just returning America to normal. This is just reverting back to what's normal. She says, but to call these measures normal would surely have made Lenin blush. Biden's immigration orders, giving citizenship to some 11 million illegal immigrants, halting construction of the Mexican border wall, and imposing a moratorium on deportations for 100 days, trash the rule of law and spell administrative and policing chaos. It says more than that, they undermine the very concept of a nation which depends for its continued existence upon its borders being secure. And they take a wrecking ball to the concept of citizenship, the bargain of duties and rights that exists only between a government and its country's citizens. And she goes on to quote from the Attorney General in Texas, Ken Paxton, who's filed some kind of lawsuit against the Biden administration because, well, as you know, Texas has quite a long border with Mexico. And this puts Texas in danger the way that Mr. Paxton views it. He's filed this suit saying, look, this can't go on. This is lawless. No border security whatsoever. It says here, this is from Melanie Phillips, Biden undermined American security by reversing the ban on travel from terrorist hotspots, including Iran, Libya, Syria, Yemen, and Somalia, in addition to North Korea, Chad, and Venezuela. She says this ban was not, as was so falsely and slanderously characterized by the Democrats, a ban on Muslims. It was introduced in 2017 against certain countries whose governments could not provide proper documentation, vetting, or ID information for citizens traveling to the U.S. I mean, it's just common sense. We don't know if we don't know who these people are. If you as a nation can't provide proper documentation, well, we can't just bring them on in. Here, all over the world, you've got these travel bans on nations just because of the flu. That's everywhere now. And the UK is looking to really clamp down on it all the more. And here's something that just tries to secure a nation's borders to protect its citizens. And that gets undone in the first day as well. Melanie Phillips says, by ending it, Biden has made America unsafe. It's an unreasonable act motivated entirely by the Democrats' ideologically twisted misrepresentation of any action aimed to protect citizens against Islamic extremism as anti-Muslim bigotry. See, it's anti-Muslim, so we've got to remove any kind of ban whatsoever. She refers to other executive actions that has been taken, the next 4 years will likely be one long line or will be one long anti-white privilege struggle session. That's Melanie Phillips. And she goes on to quote from Kimberly Strassel, the president, the fake president, Joe Biden. He came in and he fired the general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board. And as Kim Strassel points out, this is a position that's confirmed as a four-year appointment by, I believe it's the Senate. So he's just coming in and firing anyone with any kind of connection to Donald Trump, even if it's a four-year term of someone appointed by the Senate. That's the steps that he's taken. And Phillips concludes with this. She talks about, again, these executive actions, saying, when Biden speaks of unity, he means it in the same way that North Korea's Kim Jong-un or China's President Xi might mean it. Unity on his terms or else. See, we played that clip for you last week. That, hey, if you even talk down to someone on my staff, you're going to be fired instantly. One of our viewers, by the way, wrote in and said it's the same spirit that he had when he was relating that story where he went over to Ukraine and said, hey, if you don't fire this special prosecutor, then you're not getting $1 billion in aid. And the Ukrainian officials said, well, you don't have that authority. And Biden said he was telling the story himself. He was bragging about it. He said, well, go call President Obama. This happened during the Obama years. And, well, sure enough, he got fired. Sure enough, they were able to fire the prosecutor. See, they talk about unity, but it's on their terms. It's unity with us or else. Biden will be a president for everyone who thinks like him. If you don't, you'll be purged. Biden's unity excludes millions of white-skinned Americans, by implication, in fact, potentially every white-skinned American, whom he defamed in his speech by smearing them with systemic racism, nativism, and the rising white supremacy. So they've identified their targets, and they're going to come after them. And they've got their allies in the media. They've got their allies in big tech. She says, finally, this is not illiberal. It's totalitarian. It's based on coercion, intimidation, and injustice. It will deprive untold numbers of people of the prospects of employment, throw many more out of jobs, and so on. She's talking about the firing of that one individual. She says further on, far from a return to normal, what the Biden administration calls irresistibly to mind is how the horrified 18th century philosopher Edmund Burke described the French Revolution as a monstrous, tragicomic scene. A monstrous, tragicomic scene. That's the way it was described, the French Revolution. So you see these Republicans in name only. Mitt Romney's all over the news yesterday, all over the Sunday shows, talking about a new wave of Republicans now that Trump is out of the way, talking about impeachment, impeaching Donald Trump, who's just a private citizen in Florida, talking about impeachment as something that will heal the nation. That's Mitt Romney. They are happy that Trump is out of the way. They're happy. And you think about some of these verses that I think many of you have been studying. Even some have sent to me. Habakkuk 1 and verse 2, where it says, O Lord, how long? How long shall I cry, and you will not hear? Even cry unto you of violence, and you will not save. How long is this going to go on? How long will this last? Another prophet, Zechariah, he said, then the angel of the Eternal answered and said, O Lord of hosts, how long will you not have mercy on Jerusalem? And there's verses like this all through the Psalms. How long will the wicked triumph? How long will the wicked prosper? Psalm 43 and verse 2, it says, "For you are the God of my strength. Why do you cast me off? Why go I mourning because of the oppression of the enemy?" And then notice the response in verse 5. It says, "Why are you cast down, O my soul? And why are you disquieted within me? Hope in God, for I shall yet praise him, who is the health of my countenance and my God." That's where our hope rests, as I've been pointing out over and again, that verse in Romans 4 and verse 18. When all hope was gone, Abraham hoped on in faith. You know, and history helps to give us some perspective here as well. For one, just given all of the election fraud, does God see a Biden administration as legitimate? Is that the legitimately elected administration in the United States? And then, as I say, you look at history, the history of ancient Israel. We're the modern-day Israelites, and there have, in Israelite history, there have been fake leaders. There have been power struggles. You look at the example of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul. David, as you know, he was anointed as king, and then he was basically out in the wilderness for 17 years. He was the anointed one. And then even after Saul's death, listen to this from our Bible story on this subject. It says, "Although David was destined to become ruler of all Israel, the death of Saul didn't completely clear the way for the fulfillment of that event." It says, "Abner, commander-in-chief of Saul's former army, had escaped from the recent battle with the Philistines. Hoping to retain some measure of power in Israel, Abner convinced Ishbosheth, another son of Saul, who obviously had no part in the war, that it would be possible for him to become the next king of Israel if he would set up a place of operation in the town of Mahanaim in the northern border of the territory of Gad." It says the Philistines hadn't reached that area, and the Israelites there felt a special loyalty to Saul. They would naturally look to his son as his rightful successor. It says, "Although he had no authority from God to do so, Abner proclaimed Ishbosheth king of Israel. All the tribes except Judah accepted Ishbosheth." He was in there for 2 years. And he was a fake leader. He was the fake leader of Israel. Listen to what this says about Absalom, one of David's sons. 2 Samuel 15 and verse 13, it says, "And there came a messenger to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom." This is while David is king. And verse 14 says, "And David said unto all of his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee. Let us flee, for we shall not escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword." Here's David, the king of Israel, fleeing for his life, fleeing from Jerusalem, the capital city, because there was a dispute over who the leader was. Now, who was the leader in God's eyes? Who was God's king? After David died, you can read in 2 Kings, I guess this is 1 Kings actually, 1 Kings 1 and verse 5, "Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. And he prepared him chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him." It was a great procession, a great party, a great celebration for Adonijah. Did God see him as the king of Israel? Or was it Solomon? Well, you know the history. And then even after Solomon's death, you know the history with Jeroboam and Rehoboam and the division in the kingdom. And there's a fascinating bit in 2 Kings 11 regarding a king in Judah. After Ahaziah was killed, his mother, she's one of the daughters of Ahab and Jezebel, this wicked woman, but this queen ruled over Judah for 6 years. And notice how that went down. This is 2 Kings 11 and verse 1. And when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the seed royal. She just killed all the offspring because she wanted to rule. So she killed all the royal seed. She didn't grieve for her son's death. She thought, wow, this is a really good opportunity for me to take over. This is a great opportunity for me to steal the position for myself. Verse 2, it says, but Jehosheba, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons, which were slain. So all of the sons were slain except for this one that was hidden away. It says, and they hid him, even him and his nurse, in the bedchamber from Athaliah, so that he was not slain, and he was with her hid in the house of the Eternal for 6 years. For 6 years, they hid this little child, this infant, who would later be king over Judah. Look at Psalm 89 sometime. That's the psalm Jeremiah writing about the promise that God made regarding the throne of David, this continuous line. And of course, at the fall of Judah, when God was using the prophet Jeremiah to preserve that line, before Jeremiah really knew all the details of how that this would play out, he was seeing the royal seed of Judah destroyed. And he was distraught. You can read about it in Psalm 89. Let me just read a couple verses to you. It says, but you have cast off the and abhorred, you have been wroth with your anointed, says Jeremiah. Verse 39, you have made void, this is Jeremiah talking to God. You have made void the covenant of your servant. You have profaned his crown by casting it to the ground. As my father's explained before, Jeremiah didn't yet know about the Tiatefi solution. He didn't yet know about the princess that would be moved together with the throne and how that would continue in Ireland and Scotland and then Britain. God can move the throne if need be. God can set it up. God can tear it down. God can keep his promise. No matter what, he will. How long will it continue before it's finally and fully exposed for the fraud, the obvious fraud that it is? I was looking at some of the comments underneath the White House videos. These are all of the initial actions of the fake Biden presidency. And this is before they turned the comments off Friday night. Every single comment underneath, this is a fraud. You stole the election. Look at all these dislikes. You probably haven't run the dislikes through the Dominion software yet. People just ridiculing and mocking this administration all across America because they know what happened. They know what happened, and yet you still have journalists in the media carrying on as if this is completely normal. Everything here was just perfect. And what we're seeing in the Biden presidency is a return to what's normal. When we come back, we'll update you on the election steal. Rand Paul in particular, he had quite a lot to say to George Stephanopoulos yesterday on the Sunday shows about how that this is not resolved. The election fraud, the voter fraud from November the 3rd, it has not been resolved. We'll play those clips when we come back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times, but it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Amazon, the mega company, they're, I guess their warehouse in Alabama, they're holding an election as to whether or not they should unionize. And they have 7,500 employees at this this facility. So they're preparing for this vote. And listen to what this spokesperson for Amazon had to say, Heather Knox. She gave this statement to CNN on the upcoming vote. She said, "The best approach to a valid, fair, and successful election is one that is conducted manually, in person, making it easy for associates to verify and cast their vote in close proximity to their workplace." In other words, we're not going to have a mail-in voting system. Not for our this is for an Amazon vote. This is for an Amazon vote for 7,400 people. Amazon, you'll recall, they canceled Parler. Parler is the conservative alternative to Twitter. And they were using the Amazon servers, but there's too many comments on Parler that talk about election fraud. So let's just nix the entire platform. How about that? And then here come these people are hypocrites. They know it was stolen. Amazon, as you know, owns Jeff Bezos. He owns the Washington Post. They're the ones scrubbing their old articles. It's unbelievable. The level of fraud and deceit, the lying, the stealing. To hear George Stephanopoulos yesterday, this is Bill Clinton's right-hand man. And now he presents himself as a moderate journalist. So he's just down the middle of the road. And he's telling Rand Paul, the senator, that Donald Trump and his followers, they're just liars. They've accepted this lie that there was election fraud. And here's Amazon's trying to run an election for 7,500 people. And yet to make sure that it's secure, it's got to be manually done. It's got to be in person. You certainly can't mail it in. And that's just amazing to me. Amazon provided, let me see if there's another quote here. Yeah, this is from Heather Knox again. She's concerned about vote fidelity, it says. This is what Jack Posobiec, he's a conservative, he tweeted out, "The owner of the Washington Post has officially stated that mail-in ballot elections have serious and systemic flaws." That's Jack Posobiec, and Twitter then censored that tweet. That's Jack Posobiec writing about what Amazon is doing with respect to voter fraud. And, of course, Twitter is right there. Very, very quick. Johnny on the spot. Hey, we got to delete this. This is a conservative talking about election fraud. He's talking about the Amazon position. Twitter put this under his tweet. "This claim of election fraud is disputed, and this tweet can't be replied to, retweeted, or liked due to a risk of violence. Jack Posobiec's tweet is a violent tweet for him to even bring it up. We've got to flag it. We've got to delete it. And yet here is Amazon, the spokesman, telling CNN, well, for our own internal vote, here's how we intend to make it secure and to ensure that there's no voter fraud. I mentioned George Stephanopoulos, his program yesterday on ABC. He had Senator Rand Paul, who was, he came to the interview ready to smack down the radical left-wing media, and he did a good job of it. Listen to the way the whole interview or exchange begins. You've got this left-wing radical, Bill Clinton's right-hand man during the 1990s, and here he is basically saying, now, first, let's start with a threshold question. Let's establish the fact that there was no election steal. Are you willing to admit that, Senator Paul? And, of course, the senator, as he well should have done, he pushed back. Here's clip one.
Let me begin with a threshold question for you. This election was not stolen. Do you accept that fact?
Well, what I would say is that the debate over whether or not there was fraud should occur. We never had any presentation in court where we actually looked at the evidence. Most of the cases were thrown out for lack of standing, which is a procedural way of not actually hearing the question. There were several states in which the law was changed by the Secretary of State and not the state legislature. To me, those are clearly unconstitutional. And I think there's still a chance that those actually do finally work their way up to the Supreme Court. Courts traditionally and historically don't like to hear election questions. But yes, were there people who voted twice? Were there dead people who voted? Were there illegal aliens who voted? Yes, and we should get to the bottom of it.
That's Rand Paul yesterday talking about some of these cases that, by the way, are still pending. Now, the court has not seen fit to address any of them, but as he notes, they've dismissed them on standing, procedural, technicalities. There's not one that's actually heard the evidence presented. And he makes the statement there that there's a chance that those cases, some of them, will finally work their way up to the Supreme Court. That's Senator Paul saying that there's still openings. You can look at Mike Kelly's case. I think that's the Pennsylvania case where the Secretary of State came in there and basically changed the rules, changed the laws illegally with respect to the vote. Did it before the election. It was unconstitutional. That case, Mike Kelly's case, the one against Act 77 in Pennsylvania, it's still open. According to the Supreme Court docket, it's still an open case. Here is, again, Rand Paul on Stephanopoulos' show yesterday, clip two.
And those things
I have to stop you there. No election is perfect, but there were 86 challenges filed by President Trump and his allies in court. All were dismissed. Every state certified the results
after investigations, counts, and recounts.
The Department of Justice, led by William Barr, said there is no widespread evidence of fraud. Can't you just say the words, this election was not stolen?
Can't you just say it? It's like everything's been dismissed. Can't you just admit it? They can't let it go. Everyone has to admit it. Even though, like I said last week, they see voter fraud in Uganda, it's obvious. It's obvious. In any other scenario, in Amazon, it's obvious that if it's not manual, if it's not in person, there's going to be fraud. But on this, the election of the president of the United States of America. You, as I keep saying, you read between the lines. And that's basically George Stephanopoulos acknowledging that there was a lot of fraudulent activity here. And we just have to get all of these Nazis to admit that there wasn't fraud. We have to keep telling the lie, this big, bold, audacious lie, as often as possible, and then pressure everyone to just go along and admit it. It was perfect. There was no fraud. Can't you just admit it? Can't you just say it wasn't stolen? And to his credit, Senator Paul said, no, I'm not going to say it, and I'm not going to be bullied by you. Here's clip three.
Is that if we want greater confidence in our elections, and 75% of Republicans agree with me, is that we do need to look at election integrity, and we do need to see if we can restore confidence in the elections.
Well, 75% of Republicans agree with you because they were fed a big lie by President Trump and his supporters who say the election was stolen. Why can't you say
George, where you make a mistake is that people coming from the liberal side like you, you immediately say everything's a lie instead of saying there are two sides to everything. Historically, what would happen is if I said that I thought there was fraud, you would interview someone else who said there wasn't. But now you insert yourself in the middle and say the absolute fact is that everything I'm saying is a lie.
Well, because, Senator, I said what the president said was a lie because he said, hold on a second. He said the election was stolen. This election was not stolen. The results were certified in every single state after counts and recounts.
You're saying that absolutely, you're saying there was no fraud and it's all been investigated. That's just not true.
It's just not true. I love how he points out in the middle there. You know, it used to be if I said there was fraud, then you'd go get someone else. You're a journalist, right? You're supposed to be in the middle. If I say there's fraud and here's why, then you as a journalist would say, all right, well, let's get the other side. Someone that says it was legit, it was perfect, and we'll hear their side of it. As it is, Senator Paul says there was a lot of voter irregularities here, and Stephanopoulos, the journalist, says you're lying. Well, that's because you believe the lie that President Trump was telling. These are not journalists. These are activists. These are radical leftists. And they've got a platform. Of course, big tech, they're never going to censor George Stephanopoulos. They're not going to come out and say, hey, what's Amazon doing? Well, we've got to get mail-in voting. Make sure all of those Amazon employees can vote. What if they get COVID? Well, I mean, that could turn into a super spreader if they all come in and they have to do the manual voting. In a COVID environment, are you crazy? We better go for the mail-in votes because that's the only way that it can really be not just secure, but healthy as well. These are a few headlines. This law professor confirms election fraud evidence is significant. Another one says that the Democrats' first bill, there's an analysis in one of these pieces on one of the Dems' first bills. They're trying to solidify the election. The way that the election was done on November 3rd, they want this to be the standard now for elections going forward. Imagine why. I mean, it's hard to imagine why they wouldn't. They pulled it off. The steal of the century. The steal of American history. They pulled it off, and now they want these policies, the mail-in voting, the dead people voting, the people without any proper identification. They want it locked in. Stephanopoulos, by the way, mentioned 81 cases that have been dismissed. Did you realize that 30 of those cases are still active? It's true that not one single court has yet allowed the evidence to be argued. It's true. To this point, the judges have taken the position that George Stephanopoulos takes. You've just accepted a big lie. You're just a big liar. Well, as Senator Paul says, what about the evidence? Let's get in court and argue this. Let's present both sides. To this point, it hasn't happened. But nevertheless, there are still 30 cases that are active. They're still active. Here's more from that exchange between Paul and Stephanopoulos, clip four.
And I plan on spending the next 2 years going around state to state and fixing these problems. And I won't be cowed by liberals in the media who say, there's no evidence here and you're a liar if you talk about election fraud. No, let's have an open debate. It's a free country.
There's no widespread evidence of election fraud that overturned the results. That was stated as well by the Department of Justice, led by President Trump's Attorney General. In Wisconsin, there were counts and recounts.
Never studied that. Even that's
certified.
Not true. Even that's not true. Even
William
that's
Barr
not
said
true.
That directly.
Barr said that. But there was, yes, he said that. Yes, that was a pronouncement. There has been no examination, thorough examination of all the states to see what problems we had and see if they could fix them.
Good for him. There's been no examination, no thorough examination yet. And to even call for that, you've got to subject yourself to this arrogant journalist who says, you're a liar. You're a liar. And good for Senator Paul to stand up for the truth. Okay, so the former Attorney General, Bill Barr, yeah, he made a pronouncement. But was the evidence ever examined? Has a court actually examined the evidence? Has a court actually looked at the affidavits? Looked at the footage? Looked at the numbers? Looked at all of the numbers that have been analyzed? The tens of thousands of dead voters and that sort of thing? Here's clip five.
I'm not willing just to sit here and say, oh, everybody on the Republican side is a liar and there is no fraud. No, there were lots of problems and there were secretaries of state who illegally changed the law and that needs to be fixed. And I'm going to work hard to fix it. And I won't be cowed by people saying, oh, you're a liar. That's the problem with the media today is they say all Republicans are liars and everything we say is a lie. There are two sides to every story. Interview somebody on the other side, but don't insert yourself into the story to say we're all liars because we
think
there's some fraud in the election.
There are not two sides of the story. This has been looked at in every single state. The election
oh, sure there are.
Certified
there are
in every
two sides to every
state.
Story. George, you're forgetting who you are. You're forgetting who you are as a journalist. If you think there's only one side, you're inserting yourself into the story to say, I'm a liar because I want to look at election fraud and I want to look at secretaries of state who illegally changed the voter laws without the permission of their state legislatures. That is incontrovertible. It happened. And you can't just sweep that under the rug and say, oh, nothing to see here. And everybody's a liar and you're a fool if you bring this up.
That's Senator Paul yesterday, and Stephanopoulos, as you heard, saying there's no two sides of the story on this. You see their version of unity? You see what it means? You either agree with us or you're to be banned and censored. You either agree and move on with all of us, the good liberals, the good Marxists. You either agree with us or we're coming after you. Well, I don't need to play the final clip. He basically asked him again, was it stolen or not? Why can't you say it? Why can't you just admit that it was perfect? That there was no theft? We need more politicians like Senator Paul. He's a little off on certain areas, but every once in a while, I mean, he really stood his ground there. That was a pretty good smackdown, I'd say, of the major media. The media that is just cheerleading everything that has happened the last few days. This is finally, we're going back to normal. And yet, what is most in America? What do most Americans think? Well, look at the comments before they delete them. Look at the comments underneath some of those videos of the fraud inauguration, the fraudulent inauguration, and now the fraudulent presidency. Just a few minutes left here. I can wrap this up with some of the changing narratives with respect to COVID-19 and how the Biden, the fake administration, is tackling this pandemic. And now, of course, they're being celebrated for doing everything right, I guess. Even though Biden himself admitted this was on Friday, he said that, look, we really can't do anything to change the trajectory of COVID-19. This is Joe Biden on Friday, clip 7.
If we fail to act, there will be a wave of evictions and foreclosures in the coming months. As this pandemic rages on, because there's nothing we can do to change the trajectory of the pandemic in the next several months.
There's nothing we can do to change this, he said. Now, you go back to October when he tweeted, we're 8 months into this pandemic and Donald Trump still doesn't have a plan to get this virus under control. I do, he said. He was confident. He was going to get this under control. I love the people that have tweeted out how many people have died of COVID-19 since the inauguration. 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 now. I don't know what it is. We should have a tracker on this program. The number of people that have died since Joe Biden was inaugurated as the fake president. Is it on him? Isn't that how we're supposed to play this? Is it his fault now? Like it was Donald Trump's fault? 8 months. Donald Trump never had a plan. Never did anything. It was all his fault. It was the Trump virus. And then as soon as the fake president gets in there, the tracker miraculously disappears from CNN. It's gone. Well, the narrative, it's being changed even as we speak. This was the governor of New York over the weekend and what he said about COVID. Clip 8.
Never get cocky with COVID. Truer words were never spoken. I'll take credit for that quote. Never get cocky with COVID.
Never get cocky with COVID, says the governor of New York. He wrote a book last summer bragging about all the lessons that he had learned during his leadership during the crisis, thinking that the crisis was over as the summer was coming to an end. He wrote a book congratulating himself. And here he is. Here he is. We're almost into the month of February, 2021. Don't get cocky with COVID. Truer words were never spoken. I'll take credit for that. I'll take credit for that great quote. There was a piece in the New York Times talking about the surge of suicides in Las Vegas, in this school district around Las Vegas, and you read through this article and see that there's officials in that community that are finally waking to the fact that there's been all this collateral damage with the lockdowns. For one, suicides. This one school district, it's had 18 students commit suicide over the last 9 months. Now, it's a large school district in and around Las Vegas, but 18 young people committing suicide in 9 months' time. And so they want to open the schools. They want to get the young people back to work on their academics. It says here, when we started to see the uptick in children taking their lives, we knew it wasn't just the COVID numbers that we need to look at anymore. Quotes from this official. It says, we have to find a way to put our hands on our kids, to see them, to look at them. They've got to start seeing some movement. They've got to start seeing some hope. Well, we were telling you, weren't we, back in March and April, that the cure was so much worse than the disease itself. And we've been proven right on that. And yet still, what do you see? Like in the case of the UK, just absolute madness coming out of the UK as they consider an Australian style, go into the hotel for 10 days. Even if you're a UK resident returning to the UK, they're considering whether or not they're going to send you to a quarantine hotel for 10 days, I presume, like in Australia, on your dime. You pay for it. 10 days. Huddled up in a hotel because of the latest variant or strain of this flu. Complete and total lockdown. The madness continues. Well, let me finish on a short email so that we can finish on a positive note. It says here, thank you for putting your show on your new website. My husband called in to me the other day, said he couldn't get the show. My heart fell, and now we can watch you again. I'm so thankful to God, and kudos to your tech people for fixing it. So that comes from one of our viewers. You can get to the show, as you know, at thetrumpet.com live, thetrumpet.com/live. I should say. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.